Hello and welcome to the Recon Ride, the race preview show from the Velo News Podcast. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And hey, wait, did I read that right? Are we back with the Velo News Podcast?
Yeah, I hope so, because we are in literal Velo News World Headquarters in literal Boulder, Colorado right now. So we're either on the Velo News Podcast or breaking the law. Your choice.
We're back with Velo News for the Spring Classics this year, bringing you the best in pre-race analysis. I think it's the best. Hope it's the best. We're going to try to make it the best. For any of you who listened to the Velo News Podcast a couple of years ago, or who just have a voracious appetite for cycling content, well, you may have heard of us. But in case you don't, we are a race previewing outfit here at the Recon Ride. We like to talk about routes and start lists, make some predictions, and occasionally inject a little wit when possible.
None.
It's usually impossible, so we try to steer clear of that. But yeah, so we're going to preview this race, Milano-San Remo. We're going to preview the other three spring monuments as well. So there's something to look forward to for the next couple of weeks, by the way. We're going to get started, though, with Milano-San Remo. And like we said, we're going to mention what this race is all about. We're going to talk about how the riders are going to get from point A to point B. And we're going to talk about who those riders are, who the big favorites are, who we think has a good chance of winning this race. We'll try to give you some tidbits about history, you know, maybe the occasional cultural fact or, I don't know, some sort of interesting information. But this is a deep dive into Milano-San Remo, and that's what we do. We deep dive, and hopefully you can enjoy that. We'll do our best to keep it enjoyable for the next, I guess we'll see how long this show runs. Paris-Nice and Torino-Adriatico have been nicely sewn up by Marc Soler and Mikhov Kwiatkowski, respectively, which means it's time for what is probably the first race on the World Tour calendar that is, let's call it a bona fide target for even the biggest stars of the sport. Not that Torino's not a great race, or Paris-Nice isn't a great race, but there's a lot of tune-up talk that gets thrown around at those events, and there's not a whole lot of tune-up talk that gets thrown around at Milan-San Remo. If you're a sprinter, this is your race.
I don't know about you, but I do a lot of 291K training rides, usually in bad weather, on really nervous coastal roads.
You've always been fitter than me, so
that's probably why. This is a very old and storied race. The first edition was in 1907, when cycling was really more of a adventure sport than a kind of organized with, you know, tactics and stuff. But through the years, people got tired of it ending in sprints, and so they added the Poggio, and that broke things up a lot. And then it started to kind of trend back towards sprinting, and they added the Tripressa, and that broke things up a little bit. In the 90s and the 2000s, it got really, really sprintery, and I think we may be kind of creeping away from that sprintiness in the current moment for a variety of reasons, but that's a rough history of the event.
Yeah, I would say it is it's the sprintiest of the five monuments, and it's kind of a rare big one day that does go to the sprinters. There really aren't a whole lot of them. I mean, Gent Wevelgem, even in recent years, has kind of trended away from that. So it's definitely the race that if you're a sprinter and you like one days, it's your race. Although, as you pointed out, it doesn't always go to the sprinters.
No, last year is a great example. And I mean, an even better example, because you had a sprinter who decided they didn't want it to go to the sprinters. And it turned out not to work so well for him. But I mean, he came pretty close to winning. I can't get that mad about it.
I mean, I'd be happy with the podium at Sanremo.
Absolutely.
But he did a lot of work, and it didn't quite work out. He didn't seem all that thrilled with it. That sprinter versus attacker conversation where 20 minutes to go in the race, we really don't know if it's going to be a sprint or an attack. That's kind of what makes Sanremo Sanremo. And I, you know what? I kind of like that the sprinters have a monument that they can win.
No, you have to kind of approach this race on this race's terms. There's definitely not a lot going on of consequence for the first few hours of the race. But that, you know, makes people really tired, and it kind of helps define it in light of the other monuments. And in terms of describing it as sprinters versus attackers, it isn't necessarily a combative relationship between the two. You can have a team. In fact, we have some teams this year that have both sprinters and attackers, which opens up some tactical opportunities that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened last year. We had an escape with three strong riders in it: Peter Sagan, Mikhov Kwiatkowski, Julian Alaphilippe. And Kwiatkowski and Alaphilippe both had guys kind of back in the group that were capable of sprinting. And so if Sagan looks back and says, "Hey, how come you're not working?" they could say, "Well, sorry, bro. We got guys who can sprint, so we don't really feel like doing that." And it actually worked out pretty well for Kwiatkowski. He was the one that came away with that victory. Yeah, so it's always kind of hard to say who's gonna win, especially last year. I think we saw what can happen when a really strong group gets away. That said, I do think the race does maybe a little trend more towards the sprinters still. Even beyond that sprinter versus attacker question, the race has produced plenty of surprising winners in recent years. I mean, even when it's finished in a sprint, we've had Arno Demar has won the race.
Yeah, allegations that he didn't actually get back to the group without assistance, which I think are phony, but it is a question that you don't often ask about bike racing these days is, you know, where did that guy come from? How did he get back? He must have cheated somehow. There is a lot of racing that goes on behind the race, and I think it's really cool to see a guy come back from that and win, just to show that it does happen.
And to be fair to Arnaud Demar, he is a pretty good rider. I mean, he's won plenty of big races.
I was never on board with the, he must have taken a toe. There are pictures of him riding really hard with a bunch of teammates. Yeah. He has a Strava file that looks pretty like it was not altered. So
Gerald Schillick, though, maybe one of those guys who's a big surprise. And this race, despite it, even if it does come down to a sprint or an attack with some big riders in it, it has had those kind of surprise winners. Simon Gerrans, another guy that I don't really think Gerrans was a top one or two favorite headed into that race. And yeah, so this race can surprise you in the last 20 minutes, even if, let's be honest, for the first 5 hours, it can be a little less exciting to watch.
Well, that's why you have the weather, right? Is so that you can see things like dudes literally getting off of their bikes, getting on the team bus, driving over the Trichino Pass, driving back down to the somewhat less terrible weather on the Mediterranean coast, and then restarting the bike race.
This has happened, actually. This isn't just something that Cosmo made up. That actually did happen in the last 10 years.
This would be like the Super Bowl, and like the roof gives way, so they all get on buses and drive across town to a different stadium and continue playing the Super Bowl. It's truly remarkable stuff.
Whatever it takes, you know? There is, at least currently on the forecast, and we are recording this podcast in the middle of the week, there is some chance of rain. So we'll see if that does have an impact on the race, because obviously rain, thunder, that kind of stuff, and obviously cold weather too, that can really change a bike race. I mean, if you're a rider who tends to perform in good conditions, it can be totally different when it comes down to crappy, cruddy weather like that. So that's something to keep an eye on. Keep an eye on that forecast and see how that changes the race. I mean, we saw earlier this year, we saw Strada Bianca with snow on that course and then melting for the race just made a muddy, muddy race. And a great race in the end.
Great race.
You kind of feel bad for the riders, but hey, it's fun to watch. So.
Yes.
So we are going to talk a little bit more about the route, and then we're going to talk about the contenders. And then we'll make some predictions to see who we think is going to win. Put our cred on the line, because that's what we're here to do, really. Let's dive into this route. So taking a deeper dive into the Milano-San Remo parkour, the race, unsurprisingly, travels from Milan to San Remo. In Italy, in the northwest of Italy, to be specific. Milan, of course, kind of the financial capital of Italy.
And fashion.
And fashion, yeah.
World fashion capital, you could argue. Paris and New York and Milan.
And they make some cars near there, and there's some good soccer teams, football teams, if you're a European listener. You know, it's a major city with millions and millions of people. And they're going to ride from Milan quite a long ways, 291 kilometers to be exact, to San Remo, which is a pretty small little town on the coast, a nice little tourist destination, actually very close to the French border. And it's a lot quieter than Milan, but a nice place to finish a bike race.
Generally better weather too, which I think people are kind of after this time of year.
Yeah, especially if you've ridden 291 kilometers on your bike. So we're going to see the Peloton travel for quite a long time. It's several hours in transit. And admittedly, not a whole lot going on. There's going to be a breakaway, probably not too much. I mean, there might be some crashes, but we're not going to see a whole lot of action. That's my first prediction of the day. Not a whole lot of action until at least the last hour, if not the last 30 minutes. Things do really pick up, though. After like 6 hours of kind of boring racing with only one climb, which is the Passo del Torchino, there are some late rollers that build up to the Cipressa and the Poggio, which are the marquee climbs, if you will, of Milano-San Remo. The Poggio comes just 5.5K from the finish. So you got to get over these two late bumps Chipresa, 5.6 kilometers at 4.1% average. Poggio is about 3.7K at about 3.7%. So neither one of these climbs super challenging, but that's, you know, after 290K. It's a little different.
Yeah, they're definitely not your typical classics climbs. I think the Poggio statistics are a little misleading. There's definitely a steep-ish section on a couple of spots, but it's really, if you watch the race closely, it's less about making big attacks and more about really holding your position, because there are, you know, there are 80 guys at the bottom of this climb, and it's so easy to get swamped and fall back and not be able to make the group that gets away, if a group gets away. Michael Matthews, I think, last year or a few years ago, just missed. Like, you can see him following a move and could not quite get there, and it's tough. It's really hard bike racing, and I think the numbers kind of belie that a little bit.
Yeah, and also the descents are a big part of these climbs as well. You got to go down them after you go up them, and that can also, especially the being in bad position, you're in trouble if you're way back there after you climb that either one, the Chipresa or the Poggio.
The descents are terrifying. There's no other, like, watching a nice weather day GoPro of it looks horrible. Brilliant. Can't imagine in a race with wind and wet road, wet, crummy Italian road. Fortunately, the finish is on the Via Roma, which is a pretty nice road, a big kind of wide urban boulevard, close to, if not on, the ocean. It definitely gets some wind effect from being that close to the water. It's a long straightaway after the final bend, which is really more of a chicane, and we've seen people crash there, as we mentioned earlier. And it's really easy to go to early. There was kind of a trend for a while there where these races weren't won so much by the guy who finished first as they were lost by a sprinter regarded as stronger making a bad decision.
I'm thinking in particular of Alexander Kristoff, who had a really helpful teammate in Luca Paolini, who was very instrumental in a lot of his success. But that particular year, I mean, Paolini hit the front pretty early. Kristoff, who likes to go early, was just too early. Nope. And John Degenkolb came around and beat him. And that can happen here on the Via Roma sprint. And some of those names, by the way, going to be in contention, I think, again, not Luca Paolini, but some of the other names going to be in contention this year. That Via Roma finish is, it's a really nice one for a big sprint. It's just really, it's a great way to finish a long day, if you're a sprinter, of course. And we did mention, we kind of like it. I mean, even if it ends in a sprint, it's usually you don't know if it's going to end in a sprint. So it stays interesting all the way to the line.
Don't be that one guy who's like, oh, it ended in a sprint, when 30 seconds earlier, it might not have been a sprint and you were on the edge of your seat and it was an awesome race. Like, you got to remember that it's about the actual competition. It's not about, you know, where same time stopped at the end of the day.
If you didn't know it was going to be a sprint, it's still exciting. I mean, even if it ends in a sprint, that's my take. So I think we're
concur.
Strong
concur.
All right, so we've talked about the route. Let's actually get a little deeper into this start list and talk about some of the potential protagonists for Milano-San Remo. So, Milano-San Remo last year, Peter Sagan came so close to winning it. And that's happened a couple of times, actually. Peter Sagan, he's been close before. And if you look back over the last several editions, you'll notice his name up there more than once. He was also up there in 2013. He was second that year as well. This seems like the perfect race for Peter Sagan. So let's start by talking about Peter Sagan, because he has the sprinting ability. He has the ability to get away. We saw this last year. So he's really a factor in either one of those options. And yeah, this is a race that can be, as we discussed, unpredictable. And by the way, we're talking about this start list a couple of days in advance. Things can change, you know, between now and the time the race starts. But if there is a constant at this race, I think it's Peter Sagan is a contender.
Yes, I agree. And he has won this. He has failed to win this race in a dizzying array of methods. But I think one of the things I've enjoyed the most about watching Peter Sagan over the past few years is him get really good and selective and smart about his efforts. Like, I was a little surprised when he attacked last year. I think he would have been fine if he sat on and waited for the sprint. Last year's world championships were a little tricky to follow in the last 5K due to some technical difficulties. But if you find that chopper footage, and if you listen to Peter Sagan's interview at the end of the race, he really talks about how little work he did kind of getting back up. He did, you know, pull here, pull there, close the gap, but was very focused on that final sprint. And I think this is the year Sagan finally puts it all together. I think we're going to see a much less aggressive Peter Sagan on the Poggio, on the Tripressa, although I've never really seen him be active on, I've never seen anybody except Nibali be active on the Tripressa. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, thanks Nibali, by the way, for making that part of the race interesting, because you're right, people don't really get away that often on the Tripressa.
We can bring it up with Daniel Oslater, because that's a weapon that Peter Sagan has.
Well, let's talk about that. So he's for the last several years, he's kind of suffered from a lack of teammates, but this year he really picked up a new one that could make a difference.
Yep. And it's not that Peter Sagan didn't have good teammates before. It was that he didn't have a guy like Os, who is this ultra hyper lieutenant who can, you know, be guiding you into the final kilometer. He can be going on an attack over the Tripressa, which I believe we've seen him do. Really gives Sagan more cards to play. If last year Sagan's in the group and Os goes up the road, he can sit back and do what Quickstep and Sky did to him. And so it's a much better situation for him. And I think, you know, we are in peak Peter Sagan right now. I like him as the winner.
So moving on down the start list, I think we started with the guy who we think is a fair bookies favorite. And he is the bookies favorite, by the way. I think another guy who's worthy to mention is, of course, the defending champion, Mikhail Kwiatkowski, riding for Team Sky, who... he's had a nice year so far. He's just fresh off of a Tirreno Adriatico win, which I don't think a lot of people saw coming. Not that he's not a very talented rider, but he's climbing really well this year, and that's going to come in handy if he wants to win Milan-San Remo.
Yeah, he did win Tirreno Adriatico, but he also didn't win any stages. And this is not a cumulative wins category, this race. You got to be up there, got to win. But he does have Gianni Moscone behind him, which gives him, you know, another card to play like he had last year. So
yeah, they have some options for trying to get away on those last two climbs. And both those guys have good finishing kicks. Not the kind that's going to beat a group of 50, but a group of 10,
yeah,
certainly.
For sure.
So they have a good chance here, which, you know, Sky, Mikhail Kwiatkowski, I think they're going to be thankful if he can, let's say, redirect the conversation a little bit from what's been going on over there. He is a very well-rounded rider, which comes in handy here. Speaking of well-rounded riders, the guy that finished third last year is Julian Alaphilippe, riding for Quickstep. Quickstep with kind of an embarrassment of riches at this race, and that is even without Fernando Gaviria. Gaviria crashed out of Tirreno Adriatico. Well, he did technically finish the stage, I think, but he crashed at Tirreno Adriatico, broke his hand. I think he needs surgery. He's out for Milano-San Remo, which is a huge bummer for Gaviria because he was targeting not only San Remo, but he was also hoping to get some classics experience in general this year. But Quickstep itself, I don't really see that their chances of winning went down that far because they have so many other options. They have two great attacking options, Julian Alaphilippe and Philippe Gilbert, and that's a big boost to this team.
But it is not contract year Gilbert, as we saw.
This is true.
He is a guy who really performs well when there's money on the table, and maybe less well than I think people would want him to afterwards, which is, you know, fine. It's a business. He needs to, you know, have money to retire on. But he's a great rider. He is obviously not as good as he once was, but he is still a guy who goes up the road and everybody, you know, kind of throws up in their mouth a little bit because they realize they're going to have to chase him down and it's going to be hard. And Alaphilippe is... I think where Sagan is now is where we're going to see Alaphilippe in 3 or 4 years. Like, he's really kind of trying to figure out, everybody knows him. He's a known quantity now. They know he's a dangerous rider. We've seen him make moves at Worlds last year. It didn't quite work out. But he is somebody who is really, I think, kind of figuring out what they can and can't do at the top of their ability. And, you know, the best way to do that is by mixing things up in attacks.
Yeah, and he has sort of the similar thing to Kwiatkowski where he can... I mean, he can time trial, he can sprint, he can climb. He has that very versatile skill set, which comes in handy at this particular race. This team also, of course, has one of the hottest sprinters of this early season so far, one of the winningest, to use a very popular American word, seasons so far this year in Elia Viviani, who is going to be, if they send somebody up the road, kind of waiting back in the potential sprint. And He's looked as strong as anybody else of the purer sprinters on this start list so far this year, sealed the overall victory at the Dubai Tour, which, sure, that's not a World Tour race, and it's an early season event, but he had to climb up to Hada Dam to do it, which is... I had to walk up that thing to the press tent. It's pretty steep.
I was just about to say, I think you were there.
I was there.
Saw it happen.
I did. I saw poor Brandon McNulty have his dreams shattered. By the way, he was a great sport about it. His kid's like 19 years old, and he's still pretty good mood after that. So anyway, Elia Viviani climbed up that thing and won that race, the overall title at least. I think he's climbing pretty well right now. And he is, now that Gaviria is out of this race, he is Quickstep's pretty much de facto sprint option. There's no controversy there anymore. So all that being the case, we gave Elia Viviani a call to get his take on the race, what it means for him as an Italian rider, what Quickstep is planning to do, all those good things. Here's Elia Viviani.
Elia, welcome to the Velo News podcast.
Thank you. I'm really happy to join you.
Well, we're happy to have you, especially ahead of a race where you look to be a pretty strong contender. You've had a really good season so far. First question I have for you, I'm kind of curious, coming over to Quickstep, especially riding for Sky for so long and Cannondale before that, has it been an adjustment having a lead out? And is that something that you're trying to get used to, actually kind of relying on a big lead out train?
Yeah, I think it's what every sprinter dream, you know, is when... From when I become pro in Liquigas in Cannondale, I have a really strong guy, but the mentality is not always to go to the race like with full sprint team, and that is the biggest difference from Quickstep to the other team I've been in the last few years. So it's one of the biggest team in the world, and they have this mentality for sprinter. So I really can enjoy every stage sprint, every sprint, because they are really ready, but not just the guys I have always with me. Really, all the team are really ready to help the sprinter in the sprint. So if you can see also big champion in front of the race to do the lead out, 2K to go in the sprint stage, that is make really the difference. So that is the main things I think are also about my first part of the season now. With all this win, and yeah, I'm pretty happy to join Team Quickstep for sure.
Yeah, right on. So, talking about Milano Sanremo in particular, can you tell me what that race means for Italians? How big of a deal it is in Italy? Is it something where, you know, your friends back home generally are watching this race? Is it getting a lot of media? And is it important for Italian riders to to have this on their palmares?
Yeah, I think Milan-Sanremo have a few things for an Italian sprinter. You know, if you are a sprinter and you are Italian, you have one dream: win Milan-Sanremo. So that is the race you really want to win in all the career. So you see, the biggest sprinter in the world and also the Italian one follow this dream for a lot of years, because Cipollini tried a lot before to win, and Petacchi also. So, but finally they win. So I think it's one goal where you really can focus all the winter and all the first part of the season. It's the only classic for the sprinter, the monument classic you can win, you know, and it's in Italy, and this is a really lucky part. So Milan, the start is really 1 hour and a half to my home. So I have a lot of fans there in the start, and then they follow me until Sanremo and via Roma. So that is really... really cool, because you have all your fans around on Poggio in the topic moment of this race, and you really want to take this win for make a special day. You know, it's really an amazing day. So after this one, you can dream to win stage of the Giro and a lot of other races. But yeah, I think the first dream one Italian sprinter have is about Milan-Sanremo.
Yeah.
So the peloton arrives on the Via Roma after 290 lumpy kilometers. Is the sprint at the end of Milano-San Remo really different from other sprints, or not really?
I think it's not really different, the sprint. It's different the race. You know, if you look at the profile, you feel like, okay, it's a normal race. Not a lot. It's just two short climbs in the final, but a really quick one. But the distance makes the difference. So the first thing is the distance. So doing a sprint after 300K is not... the same to do the sprint in every stage race like you do 110, 120, 150 or 200K, but maximum, you have 100K more, 98K more. That makes the difference. And this small climb for a sprinter after 300K really are a big step to go over if you want to do the sprint. So the really nice and curious part, I think, about San Remo is I approach San Remo like with a lot of finish line before the finish line in Via Roma. So the first finish line is be safe in Turchino, and then after Turchino, and there is where the race starts. Then the second step is the cup. You know, the cup is you start to be in the final, and everyone wants to be there in the position, and you need to go over the cup. Then another finish line is on the top of Cipressa, because it's the first part where who want to win San Remo by attack. They need to attack from there. And then the second last is on the Poggio. When you are on the Poggio in the first group, you can start another race, the shorter one. And after the downhill, when you arrive there, it's all about tactics, because nobody are really organized. And that maybe is the only difference in the sprint. Nobody are really organized, and you need to have the legs. I think it's one of the sprints where really who have the legs can make the difference. It's not. It's about positioning, but if you have the legs in Via Roma, this straight go a little bit up. So you need to play also with the gears. I think it's a really mix of emotion and this put this sprint really different. But I think it's the race different from every other sprinter race. Then the last 300 meters is all about adrenaline and how much energy you have you still have in the leg. So
yeah, right, it makes sense. You mentioned Turchino, you mentioned Cipressa, the Poggio. There's a couple of climbs in this race, obviously, and you have been climbing pretty well this season. You made it up to the top of Hada Dam in sixth place in Dubai, obviously. You won the overall title there. Is it something that you were preparing for this offseason, trying to get better at that aspect of your skill set, or did that just kind of happen?
Nothing special. So I know, so we know, also the team know, when I'm top condition, I can really climb well. So you see me also last part of the season last year, winning race like Blue, doesn't mean you climb well, because it's not an easy race. And you just know when I am in good weight, when I have a good weight and a good condition, I can climb well. So we just focus to be really on shape in the first part of the season to win straight away, to give the team a really confidence. So a big sprinter leave the team, but another one come. So that is the biggest goal I do for what I work this winter. And then after this start, I'm really happy with that. So I'm really happy also for the second place in Cadel Evans. You know, it's the first classic of the year, and be there is really important for me.
Talking about some of those results, you've been informed since the Tour Down Under all the way through Paris-Nice, basically. Are you concerned about being at your peak for too long?
I think so. Started really well. That means Tour Down Under started like around 20 of January, so finally was a month and a half, maybe 2 months, so 2 months, not more. And then when I arrive in Tour Down Under, for sure I'm not in the best shape. It's impossible to be in the first race in the best shape of your body can be. So I think I improved really well. And then also, if I'm not winning Paris-Nice, I have a good feeling last week. So in the up and down course, it's not an easy, we don't have a lot of chance in Paris-Nice, but I really want to arrive in Nice, so I just abandoned 40k to go, just because the race are exploded and not make sense to be there to take rain and cold. But I think the shape is super good. It's the next 2 weeks is really important for me, and it's the last 2 weeks of this period, because then I rest and prepare the Giro. So I think I have a good shape. I can go away other 2 weeks for sure.
Yeah. Do you feel like you got everything that you needed to get out of Paris-Nice in terms of tuning up?
When you do one race, I think, like Paris-Nice, so it's a few years I do Tirreno, but I'm really happy to do Paris-Nice, because I think it's a good approach to San Remo. So you finish Paris-Nice the Sunday, so still 6 days before of San Remo, you have time also to do just few days of recovery and then one training like yesterday I do to in the course of San Remo, the last part. So Cipressa, Appoggio, and to do some effort to switch on the engine before the race. So I think it's a good approach to Milan San Remo. So it's really 8 days intensive on the legs. So just now you need just to approach really well the race. So.
All right, so my last question is, obviously you would want the race to finish in a sprint, but you do have options for a late attack with Alaphilippe, with Gilbert, so you know, Quickstep has all the bases covered. In your opinion, this is a race that, I mean, it does kind of, it's hard to predict sprint versus attack. Would you say that you think it's going to come down to a sprint or a late attack?
I really hope for the sprint. If I want to win San Remo, for sure I need to win in the sprint. So I think after a few years, really, we are we are sure we arrive in the sprint. Last year, Sagan is the only one can make the difference on Poggio. And we have a few cards to play. So Gilbert and Alaphilippe are ready also to try to win this Milan San Remo. So for sure we can see someone attack on Cipressa and Poggio, and I think we are ready if someone attack. I think it's not a lot of riders can do the difference on Poggio yet because the speed is so high in the last few years on the Poggio and Cipressa, so it's really difficult to do the difference and the climb, really fast climb like that. But you see, Kwiatkowski is on fire, Sagan is always super good, and he followed that race from a lot of time, and he finished second a few times, so for sure he want to win and he can make the difference. So for that we have few cards to play, so it doesn't make sense to stop a team like us to wait for the sprint. I really hope we come all together in via Roma to try to win this Milan San Remo. But I think also the rain, the provision is really wet day, so can make the difference. So with rain for sure the race is harder. So stay there when we see what's happened, and then we are ready for a few scenario.
Well, thank you so much, Elia. Much appreciated, and good luck out on the road.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Elia Viviani of Quickstep Floors, the sprinter for one of the strongest teams in this bike race. And I think a team that has so many options that, you know, even if no single guy in their team is an odds on kind of favorite, if I look down this start list, I don't think any other team is even really comes close to the amount of firepower that they have. Viviani having a great early season with all those results. He and Dylan Groenewegen really had strong seasons. Groenewegen not racing Milan-San Remo. Apparently, for some reason, his team has decided he's not going to race Milano-San Remo. And actually, he didn't sound all that happy about it. I've seen that online, but oh well, maybe next year.
Developing rider.
Yeah. Moving on down the line to a guy who's maybe not developing so much, who's at that level, or is hoping to get back to it maybe after a year or two of less success in the classics. Alexander Kristoff.
Yeah, the question in my mind is, can Kristoff win this without Luca Paolini, who was outstanding the time he won it and the time he didn't? But he's Kristoff is a guy who likes a longer sprint. He likes a longer day, but he's looked kind of a little flat. He got two wins earlier. He was second at Worlds last year, granted with maybe a little hometown motivation, but still, that's pretty good. Second in the World Championships. He had two wins in the Middle East earlier this year, but at the same time, I don't know that I've seen superb performances from him recently, but a guy who deserves mention, certainly just based on past results.
And of course, riding on a new team, UAE Team Emirates, after several years with Katusha, he finally jumped ship, along with a bunch of other guys, Fabio Aru, Dan Martin, a lot of talented guys going to UAE. And I think he's been getting over some, you know, he just struggled with some injuries and illness, and he seemed pretty healthy last couple of weeks. So I think we're going to see an in-form Alexander Kristoff at this race. Whether that's enough, who knows? Former winner, though, and that counts for something, won the race in 2014, UAE Team Emirates, also with Diego Ulissi, who has a nice finishing kick on him and is pretty punchy, could be a guy to watch over the Poggio. Former winner 2016 would be Arno Demar, who we already mentioned. He already has some results this year. Looked good in Paris-Nice.
Did go a little early at KBK, though.
Fair enough. But KBK is a measly 1.HC on the UCI rating. This is a World Tour race and a monument. Yeah. Demar is going to get it right. Or maybe he's not. I don't know. But he's certainly a contender. This is his kind of sprint. And he surprised some people a couple of years ago when he won this race. But I don't think he's going to surprise anybody anymore. We know how talented he is. He might not have the best team in Groupama FDJ. They're not a bad team.
Nice kits.
They have great kits.
They kept the FDJ look, but they got rid of
them. I agree. I've always liked the FDJ kit. Yeah, yeah. A guy who maybe isn't going to be in love with the route, Marcel Kittel, has decided to join the Milano-Sanremo fray for the first time in his career. Had a great Tirreno Adriatico. He's going to give it a shot.
Yeah, he's riding good. The question is how. Is he going to put out like little hats and mustaches and funny nose glasses to his teammates and have them just hide along the Via Roma and then spring out and do a lead out train for him in the last 500 meters? Because as good as he has been riding, and he's been riding very well, a lot of that is just picture perfect execution from his sprint lead out train. You know, I don't think anybody, you know, he's not even really having to defend his space behind these guys, which is what you want. Like, it's as good as Cippo ever looked behind Acqua Saponi. But you don't get that at the end of a race like San Remo. That doesn't necessarily mean you can't win. Cipollini won it in 2002 and then retired and then unretired to win the world championships later that year. Maybe we'll see Kittel try that. I don't know.
He's but, a little young for that, but maybe.
Yeah.
If it works, you know, whatever. Yeah, Kittel maybe coming in hot, but it's going to take a lot for him to get over those final climbs. He's got Nathan Haas, by the way, strong sprinter after a tough day who is having a nice year as well, so not a bad second option. Another guy who's really good after a tough day, Sonny Colbrelli, Bahrain Merida. He's had a really strong year. I think we've been talking about him, the cycling media at large, have been talking about him as an up-and-coming, new, maybe one of these Italians who's going to kind of finally start winning some one-day races, who's not Vincenzo Nibali, basically. For a little while now, and he hasn't quite turned that corner at the biggest races, but he does have a lot of versatility, and he can do really well after a tough day. So this is the kind of bike race that he likes, and he's also very fast in a finishing sprint. So kind of got to like Sonny Colbrelli, and Bahrain also with Heinrich Hausler, who very nearly won this race several years ago. You also have to like his teammate, Vincenzo Nibali, just from a enjoyment perspective. Yeah. He always brings entertainment to this race.
That's something that's cool to see, is that you have guys like Nibali who are not going to win this race. Mix it up, get in the moves, drive stuff, attack over the Cipressa. Like, there's a lot of, I think the Italianness of this race is maybe a little bit undersold. I think a lot of the people who are professionals now grew up as kids watching this, and they think, this is, you know, I'm not going to win, but it's Milan-San Remo. I have legs. Let's give it a shot. Let's do something. Makes for good bike racing.
Yeah, another team with a couple of different options, Sunweb. And they have a potential sprinter, and they also have that guy that won the Giro d'Italia here. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. You know what would be really cool is if Dumoulin took a road nature break.
Yeah.
And then got back.
And won San Remo.
Yeah. Now that would be
legendary.
Impressive. Yeah. You could actually probably take several nature breaks before Turchino, and nobody would, you know, it would be easy to get back.
That would drive some web traffic. I'm just gonna throw that out.
Yeah, oh yeah.
People would would visit a cycling oriented website if that were to happen.
I'm surprised they didn't get more kind of joke sponsorships. Especially a joke sponsor. But you know, Alpecin's initial entry into the sport was doping for the hair, kind of playing at the sport's history of trouble with performance enhancing drugs. I don't understand how we didn't get some sort of Belgian porta potty manufacturer.
Or Sunweb Charmin.
Yeah, you
know, something.
That'd be perfect.
That's not that hard to come up with. Matthews.
Matthews has been close in this race a couple of times. There is a how the race was won that shows him being less big than John Degenkolb in a critical moment in the sprint the year Degenkolb won it. He has the ability to get into a move and follow this or to win it from a group sprint. He just hasn't really pulled off either yet.
Yeah, and he's also coming off of an injury. He was actually not even guaranteed to race this event until just a couple of days ago. So that's another thing that kind of makes Matthews a question. I'm going to throw out a second option on this team, or third option, I guess, as an under-the-radar rider to watch.
A stealth fighter.
A stealth fighter, as I like to call them on the Recon ride, if you're a longtime listener. If you're not, I kind of apologize for that, but not really. I mean, I kind of love it. So we're going to stick with it. My stealth fighter here under the radar is Edward Toontz, who has been knocking at the door of a nice big sprint win in a classic, very fast finisher who doesn't mind some tough stuff on the way to the line. And yeah, if Michael Matthews isn't feeling up to it, and if Tom Dumoulin's long range attack doesn't work out, they do have this other option in Edward Toontz that you can't write him off. Unfortunately, one big name who will not be at the start line, 2015 winner John Degenkolb, Trek Segafredo, announced on Wednesday that he's going to miss the race. He pulled out of Paris-Nice with bronchitis, and the team's would-be second option, Giacomo Nizzolo, also out of the race with some knee issues that have been plaguing him for the last year or so. So Trek's option A and B both out, and that's kind of a big loss for this race. I think Boy Van Poppel's going to be their alternative for the sprint, but definitely not quite the powerhouse team that we were expecting from Trek. Moving on down the line, other sprinters, Andre Greipel is a guy who comes into this race as every year one of the top sprinters in the peloton, and still it's always just maybe a bridge too far for Greipel. Apologies for the World War II movie reference, our German friend. It's a tough race, and Greipel doesn't really do that well after tough races. Although, hats off to Andre Greipel, because he always tries. You know, he's always trying to do something, if not for himself or his team.
Yeah, I mean, he's a tremendous super domestique at Flanders. I think he fits well. I kind of wonder what he would do on a team like with kind of Quick-Step style armament to play off of.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Although I like him a lot of Soudal. It's, yeah. He's a scrappier squad.
I think,
you know?
Yeah, I agree.
It's like Wellens and Benoot and then Andre Greipel, you know. Let's maybe go some of the best of the rest. In the sprinting category, Mitchelton Scott, the nice 1-2 punch, Caleb Ewan and newcomer Matteo Trentin, who's Italian, by the way. Magnus Cort Nielsen on Astana, looking really good so far this year. Astana also has Michael Wahlgren. Dimension Data's got Edvald Boasenhagen and Mark Cavendish. Juan Jose Lobato riding for Nippo Vini Fantini now. This is a race that he's actually done some things at in the past, and I think he's a guy to watch. Sasha Modolo of EF Education First. Cofidis's Nasser Bouhanni would be a guy to watch, but he's apparently going to miss the race with an illness, and I think Christophe Laporte is going to be Cofidis's rider. At least that's the news as of midweek. But yeah, not a bad sprinter, Laporte. And yeah, there's plenty other, I think, second or third tier sprinters who could be in the conversation, but that's probably a pretty good rundown of the sprinters who are going to be maybe best of the rest.
In terms of before the sprint, people to keep an eye out for over the Cipressa and the Poggio, Vincenzo Nibali, we've mentioned him a bunch of times, likes to attack. Greg Van Avermaet, who is also a strong attacker, didn't do so well in the crummy weather earlier this year, but has also featured in the sprint.
Simon Gerrans, too, now riding with BMC. Not really sure what role he's going to play for them this season. It's been a little while since he was getting results, but yeah, he is a former winner of the race.
Alexei Lutsenko trying to get a reason for people to keep giving him a paycheck. His whole team a paycheck, I should say. Nothing against him, just Astana, known to have some financial troubles right now. And Tony Gallopin, one of my favorites, a great attacker. Love to see him do well here.
And I guess I'd be remiss to leave Pippo Pazzato as well, veteran, former one-time great classics contender. It's been quite some time since Pazzato was up there in the racing, but he's here. He bears mention. All right. I think we've gone down enough of the start list that we can get to Cosmo's favorite part of our program, the part where we try to predict who's going to win this bike race. I am going to kick it off. I'll take the inaugural honors of predicting the year's first monument. And I am going to put our interviewee, and I don't think I've done this
feel
once,
like
maybe.
You've done this repeatedly.
I don't think I have. I don't think I have. Maybe because we just don't get good enough interviews. I don't know. But this time, I'm picking Elia Viviani to win the race. I think Quickstep's too strong, and I think Viviani's having too good of a year. And I think Peter Sagan might try to attack too late in this race, and it might not work out for him. And if that happens, I kind of like Elia Viviani in the sprint. I also like Alexander Kristoff, and I'll put Sagan on the podium as well. I'm seeing this coming down to a sprint, though. That's how I see this playing out, and that's why I'm naming three guys who have nice finishing kicks.
I mean, with last year's race being an escape, I feel gambler's fallacy, obviously, that this race is, quote, due for for a sprint. I like Peter Sagan. I don't think it's not a sprint last year if Peter Sagan doesn't attack. And I think if he uses some of those watts on the Via Roma instead of up the Poggio, I don't know that there's anyone who's going to be able to touch him. I think we'll see a pretty fierce battle for his wheel wherever he ends up in the group. And I like Christoph to win that battle. He's coming off of... he has finished second to Sagan before, although he did not come off Sagan's wheel to finish second at Worlds. Yeah, third? Let's go with Kittel. Let's put him in the mix there. Let's do this, even without the train. I remember Alessandro Petacchi coming into this race as the greatest sprinter in the world, which he was, and then finishing like fourth because he didn't have a train and it's a long finish.
Yeah, there have been years where Cavendish or Greipel have come into this finale and the commentator kind of, as they've come around that final corner, has said, well, Cav and Greipel here, so it's pretty sealed up. It's one of those two. And it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't even close, though, in those years. And obviously, Cav did win this race once. But
we got chasing down Heinrich Hausler.
Yeah, it was quite
not really a traditional sprint.
Quite an impressive victory, but that was quite a long time ago. There have been several occasions, though, where there have been these world-class sprinters. Marcel Kittel, probably the fastest in the world at this moment, especially since Fernando Gaviria not going to be doing any sprinting for the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just so much harder than a traditional sprint that it's tough. But if Kittel's up there in the top three, I think he's going to be at this race every year from from there on out trying to win. All right, so those are our predictions. That's what we like for Milan-Sanremo, the first Monument Classic of the year. There are four more on the calendar and maybe some worthwhile closing thoughts. We talked about on the last Velo News podcast, Spencer Pollison, Fred Dreyer, and I discussed where Milano-Sanremo fell for us in the ranking of our favorite monuments. What if we sort of try to figure out where it falls in the prestige list? Because I think that's a worthy conversation to have. For me, and tell me if you agree with this, it's up there after Paris-Roubaix and Flanders, but it's maybe a slightly more targeted than Liège or Lombardia.
I definitely put it ahead of Liège. I like Liège a lot, but I feel like it's a race that benefits from being owned by the same people that own the Tour de France.
My credential for Paris-Roubaix hasn't cleared yet, so that's ASO. Please hope they're not listening.
I think the prestige is a lot more organic for this one. You definitely see excited people at Liège. French-speaking parts of Belgium are not as fired up about their race as Flanders is, but I think the Italians are more fired up for this race prestige-wise. I'm told that there are old Italian men who will talk to you about some ancient edition of this event that they saw when they were 16. And, that I don't know that you would get that with Liège. Maybe you would. The thing that I think Sanremo maybe needs to be a little worried about is you look at that prestige that comes from being this very Italian race. And then you look at something like Strada Bianca, which is almost brand new, certainly in cycling terms. And I think it's really kind of grown into itself as a race. And you have the cyclocross world champion, a Tour de France contender, and a classics rider, three guys in a break contesting that event. Like, when else does that happen? And, the fact that it is this incredibly distinctive location with these white or gray this year, these very unique roads with this incredible finish up to the Citadel, like, it's really cool. And I don't know that Sanremo is going to be able to maintain that prestige in light of this other very Italian event.
Yeah, watch out, Sanremo. This race may be coming to steal your thunder, although both of them organized by RCS. So at the end of the day,
yes,
yeah. Mauro Venue wins. I mean, that's the moral of the story.
Yes.
But there is some excitement around Milan-Sanremo, and I think there's a lot of the building excitement even in these Middle Eastern races. I mean, especially at Dubai, at Oman, a lot of the questions for the riders were geared towards Sanremo. And that's a real touchstone for a lot, not just the Italian riders, but pretty much any sprinter. This is a big chance for them. And we talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. If you're a climber, you have Liège, but you've also got Flèche Wallonne. Like, you've got Lombardia,
every
obviously.
Every mountain stage of a Grand
Tour. Yeah, right. You can win a Grand Tour, so there's that. And of course, if you're more of a cobblestone guy, you have two monuments and then a bunch of other huge races in Flanders. But if you're a sprinter, this is your race, really. So there is
even though it's not the Sprinter's Classic.
It's not. We discussed a little bit before the show how a lot of races have been called that. That term gets thrown around a little bit.
It does.
And this race doesn't always end in a sprint, but it does sometimes. So it's a prestigious race. It's certainly a great way to start the year off. And we will warn you that, yeah, probably not a whole lot going to happen in the first several hours, but it does make for an awesome finale. Every year this race has a great finale. So definitely tune in at least for the last 30 minutes. And you'll be treated to some good racing, I hope. Hopefully not too many crashes. Although bad weather is good racing usually. So sorry, riders, but yeah. I'm kind of hoping for rain. So that's the Milano Sanremo preview. Hope you enjoyed. We'll be back relatively soon. I'm headed over to Belgium for the Cobbled Classics and Northern France, by the way. I shouldn't forget Lille and Roubaix and all that stuff. But yeah, I'll be in Flanders for the Cobbled Classics. And we're going to do previews of the Ronde van Vlaanderen. We're going to do preview of Paris-Roubaix. And then we'll come back, of course, for Liège-Bastogne-Liège. So there is plenty more preview content to come. This has been The Recon Ride, the race preview show from the Velo News Podcast. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.